Good afternoon. May it please the Court, my name is Craig Stahl on behalf of the Commonwealth. The Court of Appeals erred in not finding that the victim in this case suffered a bodily injury when she was strangled to the point of being unconscious or blacking out. I'd also say I've raised the assignment of error that was procedural default and addressed by the Court of Appeals. Excuse me. I will say I think he got close. I think page 59 of the appendix, lines 12 and 20, he talks about, that there's a credibility, who do you believe, victim or the defendant, evidence to believe the defendant is the fact that there are visible injuries. So the issue of injuries was presented to the court. I would suggest it wasn't presented the way it's being presented today. But we'll acknowledge he got close to the actual issue before the court today. And as to the issue regarding the sufficiency regarding the injury, it's clear the victim said he got on top of her, his hands were around his neck, she saw black, and she agreed with the summation by the Commonwealth Attorney that she blacked out. Given those facts, blacking out under those circumstances constitutes a bodily injury. You mentioned previously, in an earlier case, this court previously in Bryant has said any bodily hurt whatsoever. And in Johnson, this case, this court also said...
Can I ask you this, counsel?
Sure.
Assume for the sake of my question that blacking out, losing consciousness, is an injury under the precedent, that is an anatomical injury. Is that what happened? And could a reasonable fact finder infer from the remarks made by the victim that she actually lost consciousness, blacked out, as opposed to closed her eyes and saw black?
I think a reasonable inference would be that she did black out. I think if she simply closed her eyes when asked, well, what did you see? A reasonable response to that, if your eyes were closed, would be, I didn't see anything, I couldn't see anything, my eyes were closed, I didn't see. But by saying I saw black, to me indicates there was an attempt to see, but being unable to because something was happening, either being unconscious or blacking out.
Counsel, let me follow on that question. Let's presume that the Court of Appeals, it's dicta in Dawson, is incorrect that you can lose consciousness but not suffer a bodily injury. So in other words, for purposes of this question, let's presume that if you indeed lose consciousness, then you have suffered a bodily injury.
Okay.
That would be point number one. Point number two, and I believe this may be where Justice Kelsey would underlie his question as well. I don't see that the evidence is necessarily sufficient to prove that there was a loss of consciousness here. If we say a loss of consciousness is a bodily injury, and if we come to the conclusion that there was not proof of a loss of consciousness in this case, where are we left procedurally? I don't see a cross error that the evidence was insufficient to show loss of consciousness.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think going back to what happened in trial court, the trial judge said, I credit the victim's testimony. I believe her testimony. And I believe there was a personal injury, was his word. Given the way the victim testified, and I acknowledge her testimony was not as clear as I would like it to be, or probably as well as the Commonwealth would like it to have been. But given what she did say, and given that the trial judge credited her testimony, saying she's credible, and that testimony included our hands around the neck and I saw black, I think the reasonable inference from that is that she was in fact
blind. Take her testimony in its entirety. I mean, I agree. The trial judge can say, I believe what she said. Here's what she said. Did you ever lose consciousness? The question. Did you ever black out? Answer, I saw black, but it wasn't like I completely and totally lost consciousness. Next question. So when you say you saw black, were your eyes open? Well, I closed my eyes. if you're going to say that you believe the woman, believe her 100%. How can you draw the conclusion that, in fact, she lost consciousness when she said she didn't?
Well, most of her testimony is saying something, taking a little bit back, saying some more, taking it back. That's the way that the trial played out, and that's just the facts we have, obviously. But I think, viewed in light most favorable to the Commonwealth, we get the most favorable parts of her testimony. To the extent she's saying something that contradicts herself, I think the Commonwealth is entitled to view that evidence in light most favorable to us, even within her own testimony. And the light most favorable to us in her testimony was, I saw black. And she didn't say, I didn't see anything, I had my eyes closed, I couldn't see. And I think that's a unique phrase in the sense that I saw black, which indicates an attempt to see but being unable to for some external reason.
Well, in cross-examination, it's even worse. Defense counsel, you can't say he actually put his hands around your throat? Question. Answer, it wasn't a choking motion. Let's believe her 100%. Believe everything she says.
I understand, Your Honor, it directly contradicts the statements she was agreeing with on direct.
I don't think it contradicts anything on direct. I mean, she said the prosecutor puts words in the question. As he grabbed you around your throat, did you ever lose consciousness? Did you ever black out? She doesn't answer the first part. She answers the next part. I saw black, but it wasn't like I completely, totally lost consciousness. So when you say you saw black, were your eyes open? Well, I closed my eyes. I believe every word she says, and I have real concern about the sufficiency of this evidence.
Mr. Stollett, if bodily injury is any bodily injury whatsoever, and if the non-choking motion of the hands around her neck caused her to approach loss of consciousness, but she didn't totally black out, why wouldn't the trial court not be within its province to say there was a bodily injury on the spectrum of approaching consciousness, total loss of consciousness?
I agree, Your Honor. And I do think if we have unconsciousness, we clearly have an easily defined bodily injury. I do believe that sometime between restricting the flow of oxygen and respiration and circulation until you actually become unconscious, somewhere along that spectrum there's also going to be a bodily injury. It's obviously a much grayer area, not as easy to define, but there's going to be some injury that she's going to suffer prior to being actually completely and totally unconscious. And the Johnson case talks about any impairment. So if she was unable to see, that could conceivably be an impairment. This court has defined the term bodily injury broadly. It's been defined as common everyday meaning. If somebody, I think, reasonably, objectively, is being choked to the point where they're either almost unconscious or unable to see, or however you want to phrase that, it's reasonable to think that person's going to believe they've suffered an injury. I've been injured. I've been assaulted. I've suffered some type of damage to my body by having my neck squeezed to the point where I can't breathe. The blood's not flowing properly.
That's not what she said. I'm not even sure this is an attempted strangulation, much less a strangulation. Did his hands actually go around your throat, or was he just lying on you? Is that what caused you to close your eyes? Answer, he was in the general area. What on earth is that? But you can't say he actually put his hands around your throat. Answer, it wasn't a choking motion. This is from the victim.
And I understand, Your Honor, that's an issue that I'm well aware of with this case. I will say, and if I could find it, I should have written this down, there's a question asked on direct where it seems to kind of sum up what's going on. And okay, this is on appendix page 20, starting at line 21. So let's be clear. He was on top of you. He had his hands around your throat, and then you saw black. Answer, yes. That's about as clear, unfortunately as it may be, that's about as clear as a version of events from her, I think, as we get. And I think she says, the hands were around the throat, I saw black. That's where we are. And that's not sufficient, it's not sufficient, but that's the facts we have.
Counsel, In football, when it's fourth down and long, the reasonable inference is it's time to punt. So I'd like to actually get you to a different level in this case as quickly as I can.
Okay.
And that is, if one is unconscious, just as a general proposition independent of these facts, if one is unconscious, is there a bodily injury?
Yeah.
I want to deal with Dawson, frankly, more so than the facts of this case.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that being suffocated to the point of being unconscious, that's an injury. And I think it might make more sense if somebody is struck hard enough in the head to be rendered unconscious. That's something that you ordinarily get. That's an injury. That's a bodily injury they've suffered. In addition to whatever injury to the scalp or whatever, but just being knocked unconscious, there's just an intuitive feel that is a bodily injury. And whether it comes from a blow to the head or being suffocated, that is a bodily injury.
Okay, thank you.
And you know, the facts are what the facts are. And I'm fully aware of the testimony here, but I think she said enough. Hands around the throat, I saw black. I think that's enough, if not to be outright unconscious, close enough to constitute evidence of a bodily injury. I'd ask to reserve the rebuttal of my time and ask this court to affirm the trial court.
All right.
May it please the court, I'm David Embry. I represent the appellant, Edward Chilton, in this case. I would concur with the court's discussion earlier that this evidence and this record does not establish that the woman ever lost consciousness. She, in fact, says that she did not. So I don't think this is the right case for the Commonwealth to argue that being rendered unconscious, in being rendered unconscious, an individual has suffered a bodily injury. So I think they're asking this court to rewrite the statute to include being rendered unconscious as a bodily injury. Now,
let me ask you a loaded question. How can being unconscious not be a bodily injury? Your central nervous system, your mind, everything is shutting down, and you're completely incapable of doing anything. That's not a bodily injury, and a cut across your forehead two millimeters long is?
Judge, I would argue that's correct. I mean, I think that being rendered unconscious, isn't it? I would characterize as more of an impairment. And I didn't cite in my brief, but the New York statute for strangling specifically mentions being rendered unconscious as one of the things that is violated by the statute.
So if you strangle somebody and they're unconscious for 3 hours, they don't wake up. That doesn't violate the statute. But if you strangle somebody and put a bruise on them, and the capillary damage lasts long enough for a police officer to take a photograph, that is violating the statute. Does that make sense to you?
It may not make sense, but I think that's how this statute should be construed, because it says bodily injury. And in my mind, in the case law, I think a bodily injury is a physical injury. It may not manifest itself directly. It may not be able to be seen, but it's something that isn't right with the body. An impairment, I would think, is more towards you've lost your ability to consciously be aware of what's around you for a temporary period. If this statute said bodily injury or impairment, I think Mr. Stoller would have a much better argument, frankly. I just think this statute needs to be redrawn to do what he wants it to, which is, if being rendered unconscious violates the statute, let's make it explicit, and let's not try to project as to what the General Assembly meant by using this term bodily injury. This statute is specifically designed to elevate what often would have been a assault and battery when it's conducted in this fashion, and the reason that these statutes have been passed recently is because this is a very prevalent form of domestic violence. And
counsel, let me interrupt you just a second.
Yes,
before you get off that tangent. Let me ask you a different question. I'm not an expert in this, but I understand in these ultimate fighting games, contests, whatever they are, chokeholds are used and people give up rather than be choked. Is that a bodily injury if you are being choked under the statute, if you are being choked but yet not rendered unconscious?
Your Honor, I think it depends on whether there's a physical manifestation of that choking under this language. A bodily injury. In the Dawson case, there was marks. The forensic nurse noticed the woman had marks around her neck.
There is a physical manifestation. My brain needs oxygen. My brain doesn't get oxygen. My brain shuts down. That causes all of my other senses to shut down, which causes me to fall over. and by the way become completely defenseless at the hands of my attacker at the time, is that not a physical is the physical manifestation not the loss of consciousness?
Judge, I would argue it's not clear. I think it's arguable, but I think if that's what the General Assembly wants the statute to do, then it should put language in it that makes it clear that if you're strangled, bodily injury or loss of consciousness for any period of time, if that's in here, now, notwithstanding the problems in the record in this case, where I would argue there's no evidence that she lost consciousness, but if she had, then I think clearly I have no argument here. But this statute, the Commonwealth is struggling to try to get it to do something, which I just don't think the language of it as it's drafted allows this court. The Commonwealth is asking this court basically to redraw the statute so that it takes
bodily injury could be internal, couldn't it?
Yes. But I think there would have to be some manifestation of it. For instance, there was the police officer who was rammed in his vehicle, and he had, you couldn't see it, but he had a strained back and was taking medication and was out of work. So losing consciousness, we can lose consciousness voluntarily, or, you know, it's being unconscious is not necessarily unnatural.
But if that's the result of someone's hands around your neck.
That's not a natural thing. No, it isn't. And I don't disagree that shouldn't be punished. But I just think this statute would need to be redrawn to do that. And even if, and I would argue, this record is not the one to do it because the evidence is not sufficient to show that this woman was rendered unconscious.
There is a leading up to someone completely losing consciousness and falling out on the floor and not having any sense of what's going on around them. It doesn't happen instantaneously. And so the process of the brain shutting down because of oxygen deprivation is a process. So somewhere along that continuum, this lady says, I didn't completely lose consciousness, I wasn't totally unconscious, but that she's indicating that there was a period along this line where I was becoming unconscious. So if total loss is a bodily injury, which I hear you're not willing to concede, somewhere along that continuum, one has to be also injured bodily, suffering a bodily injury. You're not going to, you don't have to answer that. I'm just
this isn't a good
case. You don't even agree that the total unconscious.
This isn't a good case for
you
that.
May move
this
on
isn't a good case in a lot of respects. I'll acknowledge that. But
my argument is
will
for
you
another
trial
fall.
Counsel?
Oh, yes.
All right. So it seems to me, I think she reported a strangulation at the date of the incident, correct?
I don't know what she reported, Judge. I don't recall. The police officer, in this case, there's a picture in the record. We don't have that, but, I mean, there's a picture in the record. The officer testified he did not notice anything, you know, any injury or any marks on her, anything. I don't know exactly what she reported.
I thought maybe that was mentioned and either admitted for a limited purpose or maybe even not admitted that her original complaint was strangulation. But by the time of trial, she backed away considerably from that.
I don't. These victim and the defendant here had an ongoing relationship, and whether she didn't feel as bad about it as the night it happened. I think she was very frightened, certainly. But whether she had been some sort of, I don't have any idea, whether they reconciled or whether she just didn't think it was that bad. Because the officer, you know, the testimony was he didn't notice anything. He asked, do you want medical attention? She declined. He took a picture because she had mentioned, I guess, that the hands close to the throat. That didn't show anything. And the trial judge found there was bodily injury, but he didn't articulate that it was a loss of consciousness. He just said, I found, you know, I think she's had a bodily injury. And I guess the reason I didn't assign crosshairs is because he didn't say that she, her loss of consciousness. He said bodily injury, and he didn't articulate that. I agree this isn't a very good record in terms of the way things were presented. But at any rate, I would ask the court to affirm the Court of Appeals. I think they got this case exactly right. I think it's up to the legislature to clarify and that becoming rendered unconscious by being choked falls within the statute, and I think that would solve this problem. But unless there are other questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your argument. Mr. Stallard, you have 3 minutes, 39 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. think briefly, I'm not sure I answered Justice Mann's question earlier regarding the procedural posture of this case. The Court of Appeals didn't make a specific finding that she was indeed unconscious. It just said that even if she was unconscious, that's not enough for bodily injury. I think even given that purported finding, I think a cross error would have been appropriate to counter the claim that there was any unconsciousness. The fact that that was not made, the only assignment of error before this court does not encompass the sufficiency to establish unconsciousness. So,
but the appellee is not trying to change the result at all.
I understand, Your Honor. I answered the question. It may be no difference at all. I'm just saying that there may well have been a basis to file. I'm not saying it's necessarily required, just that, and as he indicated, maybe he could or maybe he shouldn't have. I'm just trying to answer the question. And Judge Rout, Justice Rouse, your question earlier, I think, as Mr. Emery said, the issue was the police officer was trying to explain why he took a photograph of the neck. There was some objection, and they allowed him to continue, and he just basically said, based on what she told me, I took a photograph of her neck, which is why we have that photograph.
And so that was admitted for the limited purposes of explaining why he took the photograph.
Exactly.
Because
right.
She had reported strangulation.
That's the speculation. Yes, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, again, I'd ask to affirm the trial.
The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.